wasn't much to offer. In fact, it was ridiculously inadequate. 5 loaves of barley, a pair of dried fish. And yet, with no more than that, Jesus is able to feed 5,000 people. Now, isn't the most spectacular miracle he ever worked, walking on water, bringing the dead back to life, far more impressive than the multiplication of the loaves and the fishes? But notice this. This miracle of the loaves and the fishes is the only miracle that's recorded in all 4 Gospels. The only one. For that reason alone, it deserves a closer look. Why this one? Why not something else? Why not bringing the dead back to life? Well, I can give you a few reasons. The first is this is the miracle that made people know that Jesus was the long-awaited Messiah. Because this isn't the first time that God had ever fed his people with bread. Remember the story of Moses in the desert? And the manna appears. Every morning the bread from heaven appears, and miraculously so. And maybe you remember the story of Elijah and the jar of flour that never ran dry. It's not the first time God ever fed his people with bread from heaven. It was in a class all by itself, because everybody knew that when the Messiah came, he was going to repeat the miracle of Moses. He was going to make the bread from heaven appear. And so when people saw Jesus multiplied loaves and fishes here in the gospel, this was the moment when the crowds knew this is the one we've been waiting for. That's why it's in all 4 Gospels. But there's another reason, and it's because it points forward to the Eucharist. Now, I won't go through all the exact parallels, but just trust me when I say that if you take a copy of this gospel and you line it up side by side with a copy of the story of the Last Supper, there's link after parallel after link after similarity. It's a total foreshadowing of what Jesus is going to do at the Last Supper when he gives us the Eucharist. And just like this miracle in the desert, when the people received the Eucharist, they were completely satisfied and lacking in nothing. But there's a third reason this is so important. This is the one I'll focus on today. And it's the importance of your cooperation with the good God wants to do in this world, the importance of your cooperation. There's a detail that's only included in the Gospel of John, what included in the story that we just heard, of a little kid in the crowd. He happens to be carrying in his arms 5 loaves of barley and a pair of dried fish. And the only reason this miracle takes place is because that kid gave up his lunch. It was spectacularly inadequate. But he put it in God's hands. And there's a lesson there that we need to live all throughout our lives. What you have can be absurdly inadequate. But understand this. God takes your inadequacy and he makes it enough. Remember that. Never let the good you cannot do prevent you from doing what good you can. Whenever you cooperate with God in doing anything good, he does on his own terms far, far more, miraculously more than we ever could. And it's one of the most important lessons that this gospel teaches us. And it launches me off onto a related point. I've been itching to say this for the longest time, and this is the closest example I can give to say this. Here's the related question. We all know that good things happen when we cooperate with God in doing good, but how much responsibility do we bear? Not when we cooperate in doing good. How much responsibility do we bear? How guilty are we when we cooperate with other people in doing evil? Maybe not the question you expected the priest to bring up in the homily, right? There's a lot of people who hear that and they clutch their pearls. And they say, heavens to Betsy, I would never, ever cooperate in doing evil, ever. Except for the fact that, yes, you would. Except for the fact that you do. All of us do, your priest included, on a daily basis. Here's why. Because we are a human community, so interconnected with one another and so dependent on one another for everything. I mean, so much as waking up in the morning, turning on the lights, and brushing your teeth, you've already depended on crews and crews and crowds of people that made all that possible. So interconnected that the evil that somebody else does somewhere out there across the world is something you're participating in, whether you like it or not. Thinking people realize that. Thinking people stop and have moral quandaries. For example, a man came into my office one day. He worked in a hospital. And he said, the hospital where I work does abortions. Now, I'm in a totally separate part of the hospital. I'm not part of it. But don't I wake up every day and go in and work in that hospital? Aren't I part of the problem? Aren't I enabling the system? Tell me, Father, do I need to get a new job? Had another man, he was a tax specialist, came into my office and he said, Father, your tax dollars, granted, they do lots of essential, good, and needy things, but let me tell you, and he listed out all these things, utterly unsavory and very evil things happening right here and all around the world, and entirely because of the tax dollars that we contribute. And he said, Father, what's the next step? What's the right thing to do? I don't know. Had another man came in and talked to me once. And he says, you know, there's only 3 nationwide telephone networks in this country. Every time you pick up the phone, you are using one of these 3 networks. I'm not sure whether this is still true or not, but it was true when the guy told me. He says, all 3 networks give money to Planned Parenthood. Does that mean I can't make a phone call ever again? Father, what do I do? These are the questions of what they call moral cooperation with evil. Thinking people are troubled by this, and they've been talking about this for years. And please understand, before I say anything else, please understand, a homily is not a classroom. I cannot exhaustively talk about this. There are far more examples, far more nuances than I can possibly mention in a homily, but I can give you a few guidelines to help. How guilty are you for cooperating in the evil that other people do? Well, it depends on 2 things. Number 1, do you agree with the evil that's being done out there? Or not? Or does it happen in spite of you? And number 2, how closely related are you to the evil being done? How proximate are you to the wrong being done? Picture this. 2 people work in the same hospital. The hospital has abortions. One of them is a janitor, swabs the floor. The other one works as a receptionist in the office of the abortionist, taking the phone calls and making the appointments. Question, are they both guilty before God? Answer, no, they're not. And here's why. It depends on how close you're related to the evil that's being done. If you're far enough away from the evil that is being done, that it's going to happen with or without you. It doesn't mean there's nothing you should do. It doesn't mean you're scot-free. It doesn't mean you shouldn't raise a voice or anything like that. But you're so removed from the evil being done that you're not morally guilty for it. Okay, it's permissible. And if you're interested in learning more about that, the technical term for that is remote material cooperation, for those who want to look these things up. But let's say you're very closely involved. Let's say you're such an integral player that the evil being done cannot happen without your support. Then you are guilty, whether you say that you support it or that you say that you oppose it. Because the fact of the matter is, it can't happen without you, and yet you cooperate. For those of you who are curious about this and want to read more about it, it's called proximate material cooperation, and it's the reason why the secretary would have to get a new job. If you want to understand what this means in practice, here's a quickity short example. You may not agree with the ones who robbed the bank, but you cannot drive their getaway car. Okay? That's moral cooperation in a nutshell right there. And if any of you are familiar with the Nuremberg trials at the end of World War II, you know, they put war criminals on trial for crimes against humanity. It's essentially what I just said is a summary of the reasons why some were acquitted, some received a light sentence, and some were sentenced to death. The question is, How essential were they in the execution of what was wrong? But there's one circumstance in which you're absolutely always guilty for cooperating with evil. Absolutely always guilty, and that's when you agree with the evil being done. So somebody says, I'm going to work in this hospital and not that one because this hospital does abortions and I want more of that in the world. Whether you work there as a janitor or as a secretary at the desk of the doctor, you're guilty just because you support the evil that's going on now. Here's something that I must say. It's very rare, it's exceedingly rare that the bishop ever directly instructs his priests to talk about something in a homily, but he's done it this time. In November, there's a couple issues that are coming up on the ballot that we cannot support in good conscience. One supports gay marriage, the other supports abortion. If you want to know more about it, there's a table in the back of church. The bulletins are stuffed. There's information in the bulletin, and there's plenty of links to read more about it. But the fact of the matter is, you're directly supporting these things, and the bishop wants all the priests to say this, and you can't do that. I mean, there's no excuses. There's no, I couldn't help myself. It's what they call formal cooperation, if you want to look at it more specifically. And just to preempt all the complainers who get upset that I mentioned such a thing, if you want to go complain to the bishop, I would say, please do. I'll even stamp the letter for you because it'll make me look really good. He'll be glad I said it. Okay? But like I said, it's not a classroom. I can't exhaustively explain all these things. There are many more examples and many more nuances that I could give, but I hope you find that helpful. Because there's a lot of evil in the world, and it's so easy to complain about it, isn't it? It's so easy to complain about your home, to complain about your job, to complain about the church, to complain about the state, to complain about the government, to complain about the world. It's so easy to complain. But complaining doesn't do any good. The question you have to ask is, what are you going to do about it? I knew an employer once. And when employees came to him with a complaint and no plan as to what they wanted to do to make it better, he would always answer, don't bring me problems, bring me solutions. Now that's a wise man. Don't bring me problems, bring me solutions. And if there's a message at all for this week, it's this. When you see an enormous problem in the world, there's two things you can do. You can throw up your hands into the air and you can say, I can't. Or you can throw up a prayer and throw up your best actions and say, God can. All he asks is for your cooperation. And that's why I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Amen.